I remember a pacer of mine at Angeles Crest. It was about mile 82. I was running down the steep hill going down to Idlehour, and I was like, oh my God, my quads are trashed. And he turned to me and said, Andy, shut up. Everybody's quads are trashed. You know? And it added, you know, I was like, well, of course, it's mile 83 and I'm running down a steep hill.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on great runs with fun guests that help inspire us, help us become better runners, and hopefully better human beings. If it's your first time here, we hope you have some shoes. You can run barefoot if you want, but if you have shoes, lace them up. You're welcome to run with us, and we will enjoy your company.
And today we're running with a magazine in hand on the mini miles. We have AJW with us today.
And this magazine, I tell you, it's a couple hundred pages long, and Scott's and my articles are excellent.
Thanks, AJW. Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of the day as a kid.
Why can't we enjoy cereal anymore as adults, Don? It's kind of been labeled as an unhealthy choice for breakfast, right?
Yeah. We're all trying to eat better, but healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you once loved, but without all the bad stuff. It's time to become a kid again, Scott.
And they have a lot of different flavors. They have cocoa, they have fruity, they have frosted, and my favorite, the peanut butter.
This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of carbs.
And get this, it's only 140 calories. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. Bring back that childhood memory of eating cereal, but eat good cereal. Go to magicspoon.com/TRN and grab a variety pack, and be sure to use our promo code TRN at checkout to save $5 off your order. Taking care of all the vitamins and minerals that you need to take to compete at a high level, take the complexity out of it with AG1. It's simple. All you do is take a scoop, pour it in 8 ounces of water, shake it up, and you're good to go.
It tastes great and it's good for you. We work hard out there to get in shape, but one thing we shouldn't have to work hard at, and that's selecting the right nutrition.
You're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens every single day with just a little bit of a drink.
My day starts out with nutrition that my body can use.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of the immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you need to do is go to athleticgreens.com/trailrunnernation and take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Andy Jones Wilkins.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And we are doing another episode of Audio Magazine. And Don, we'll jump right in and explain the rules.
Let's see if you can define what Audio Magazine even is, Freeman.
Well, you know, Audio Magazine is an opportunity for those of us, and I would include all three of us, that have scoured the internet just looking for interesting topics and then bringing them up for discussion. And it's very similar to a trail run where you might say, hey, did you see the article on X? And you kind of talk about it. And we're just bringing up things that we believe are extremely interesting and might be able to make you a better runner and a better human being, Scott.
Actually, let me try to redefine that for you.
All right.
Audio Magazine is just like a magazine you would pick up off the rack. You open it up and there's articles in there. And those articles, we are the authors of those articles. We may have plagiarized from another magazine or another source, but we are the authors. And the spin with TRN Audio Magazine is that we first give the title of the article, and then the other two try to guess what the article is about. And then we have a lively discussion on that topic.
Ryan, that was clearly much better definition than I gave, so let's use that one for the show.
And let me just add, we've been working on this particular issue for months now. It's you know how sometimes at the end of year magazines have, you know, their end of year double issue, which is packed with even more valuable tidbits of knowledge and wisdom. Well, think of this as that year end double issue of Audio Magazine
in September.
And I will say, pull back the curtain a little bit to see what actually goes on behind the scenes at TRN. We actually have been working on this for weeks, and most of the work has been by throwing mud at the other two, back talking and saying that our topics are the best and yours suck. So we decided to make this Audio Magazine. We're going to try something new. In the show notes is a link to a survey. We're going to have all
we have show notes.
We're going to have all of the topics listed there by author, and you can rank them from one to how many ever topics we have. And then you'll be able to see live, you'll be able to see the results and judge for yourself who actually was the trash talker with the best topics.
I'm a bit concerned now that I might be exposed, but I do feel very confident that I will at least attract a few sympathy votes.
What do you think, Andy?
Well, I think, I mean, you can reach out to some of your family members, I suppose.
Don's going to employ some of his younger family members to keep voting, to go on there and vote multiple times. And that's okay. That works.
Well, here's the problem. We have one professional writer here. And Scott, that's not you or I. Andy Jones Wilkins is on I Run Far, and he has consistently produced for years, maybe decades, just an article a day or a week or something.
Hey, Andy, you can't implore the readers of the I Run Far tap room to go on and vote for you. That's not fair.
No, I won't do that. I won't need to do that. My topics are the best.
Okay.
Well, all right, let's roll. Let's let Ryan decide, our producer, who should step up to the plate first and take a swing.
Yeah, flip that three-sided coin.
Let's go with Scott.
All right. I'm gonna start out slow. I'm just gonna get a base hit on this one. So this is my first one. Be prepared, because once my muscles get warmed up, there's gonna be some dingers that go out of the park. But starting out, the number one, this is a strong, strong base hit.
I'm hoping.
This is the title to my article. How much is too much? How much is too much?
And as tradition has it, after Scott comes up with this article, we need to guess what it might be about. And what I think, it's just about mileage. How much mileage should we be running a week?
Well, that's not right. you know, Scott said, I think Scott gave away some of the key pieces there. He's become a little bit of a raven trickster over these last couple of audio magazines. And I think. Did you hear? Everybody at home heard him. I'm going to start out slow, which, right. Which of course is something that's characteristic of Scott. And so, and we also know one of his favorite things to do is sleep. And after you sleep, you usually start out slow. So how much is too much sleep? Ooh. This is an article about, we've heard so much about this sleep, you need 9.5 hours and this, that, you know, and you make sure all your lights are turned off and your phone is all that. There can be too much, and that's what this article is about.
Very good, Scott. Do the reveal.
Both are very strong topics, but very predictable. I knew that I was going to throw you off, and it was going to be something about mileage or something about strength training or something like that. I did not pick sleep, but here is what the article is about. The article is about the price of shoes. I did a little research, and there are some shoes right now that are crazy expensive. I remember when I first started running, I was not a runner, and I went to the big box store and picked a very expensive pair of shoes off the wall. They were the wrong shoes. I should have gone to a running store and got some professional advice. But they cost me $90. And I thought, $90, that is an expensive pair of shoes. Well, let me tell you, there are some shoes out there right now that are really expensive. We're not just talking the big brands that you're aware of that show up at the races that all the sponsored runners are wearing. There is a shoe by a company, and I don't want to disparage any company. That's not the purpose of this. It's just to highlight the price of shoes. Naked Running Band. If you remember that company, they make that little band that would go around your waist and you could put stuff in. They now are manufacturing a shoe called the Naked TR Trail Racing Shoe. The price, $289.99. So $290. Mm-hmm. That's the least expensive shoe on my list. The next one is from a very popular brand, the North Face. The North Face is now making a running shoe called the Flight Vective that is $330, $329.99. There's another new and up and coming brand called Speedland, the Speedland SLPDX, $375 for that trail running shoe. And finally, to round out, the most expensive running shoe I could find is made by Gucci. It's called the Gucci Run. The shoe is bringing up in enough dollars. They didn't even hire a marketing team to come up with a good model name. It's just called the Gucci Run. $890, folks. $890 for a pair of running shoes. So my question is, I'm used to paying. In fact, I just went and bought a pair of new shoes. So did Don. And I think they were about $140, if I remember right. And I just thought, man, that's a lot of money. $140 is a lot of money for a pair of shoes. I wonder how many miles I can make out of these shoes. But anyway, how much is too much? At what point would you say, I think I'm going to continue to run in my shoes that I have instead of going and buying a new pair? What's the threshold, folks? Don't all speak at once.
I'd be curious to what. So the article doesn't answer that question. It just puts it out there. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of similar to you, Scott. I used to think $100, but
yeah.
I'm dating myself. Maybe that was 15 years ago, right? A pair of Asics or Montrails, they were $95, and you say, and then once it went over that $100 kind of psychological threshold, then you were like, maybe I could pay $140 or $150. So my cutoff is kind of in the mid. Right now, 2022, in the mid hundreds, so 140 to 160. Some of the numbers you quoted are really surprisingly high, but it makes me wonder this. And I know, Scott, you come from a ski racing background. You know that there's this kind of weird thing in the world of skiing and lift ticket prices.
Yes,
that there's this perception that like Vail is typically, they announce their prices for the coming year. And there's like, Vail once again for the 12th consecutive year has the highest lift ticket price in the country. And it has the consequence of making Vail more attractive to skiers because of the price. I wonder if that's happened with running shoes.
That's interesting. I mean, I think it goes across many different industries, like wine, perhaps. Can you really tell the difference between a $30 and a $300 bottle? And the people that have the proper palate can say, of course you can. But I mean, for the average person, and if we put these shoes on that Scott's talking about, the 800, I don't think Gucci knows how to make a trail shoe, but let's take one of the higher priced shoes and a lower priced shoe and have you run in them blindfolded and see which, if you could tell what the better shoe is. I wonder if the price really directs our opinion.
Well, and you think back, where we were introduced to the Tarahumara, that all they did was take the retread tires and put some leather straps on them. And they ran on those until they got holes in the retreads, and they were free.
So here's my question. I think back, and I'm just going to pick a year out of the blue, something in the past, 2005. And I think back to the shoe that you wore, AJW, in 2005. Do you think that shoe really helped your performance, or you would have had a stellar race either way? What shoe did you wear? Do you remember?
Well, it's in a museum in my basement. at the time, you might remember this company. There was a small ultra running team that was from Vasque, VASQUE, and they made three or four different models of shoes, and and I was running in the Vasque Velocity, it was called, and it retailed for right around $100 in 2005. I really liked it, but you know, for those, I get made fun of a lot about this, but for the years that I was getting free shoes, and it wasn't very many, maybe eight or nine years that I was a sponsored runner, I didn't really care how good the shoes were as long as I got them for free. But it makes me wonder, I mean, what do you think the $300 one lasts three times as long as the $100 one, right? That would, one might say that about a car. You know, if you paid twice as much for a car, but you got twice as many miles out of it, you'd be like, okay, well, that's a good purchase. But I wonder if that's the case with some of these high-end shoes.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Or you spend that kind of money and it makes you faster. You buy a faster car. So are these shoes going to make you faster? Are they going to make your legs stronger or less fatigued? It's a great question. And it's a question I don't think I will ever answer because I ain't spending that kind of cash on a pair of shoes.
Well, so much of our performance, you know, is in between our ears. And not, you know, in our feet or legs. And if you feel good and you think you're in the very fastest set that you could possibly lace up, then you might perform a little bit better.
Now, with that stated, I'm gonna flip the coin over and say, boy, isn't it nice having a brand new pair of shoes, even though the old ones may not be completely worn out or the miles completely run on those. But getting a new pair of shoes, doesn't that make you just spring your step a little bit more?
Agreed.
Absolutely. Nothing like you take them out of the box, you pull out the stuff on the inside, you relace the laces the way you like them, you get your feet. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's, there's no feeling quite like it, actually.
Is there something, Scott, that you, or, and this goes to you too, AJW, that you have a new set of shoes that you absolutely, trail shoes, that you absolutely will not do in your new shoe?
Walk.
You will not walk. Will you go to the store?
Oh, no, I won't use them for street shoes. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I find that for the first, especially, let's say, the first month of a, maybe less, 3 weeks of a new shoe,
yeah,
I will only wear them running. So let's say I'm driving to the trailhead, right? I would drive to the trailhead with my flip-flops on or whatever and just put my shoes on at the trailhead. You know, and then after about 3 weeks, I stopped doing that and I just drive to the trailhead with my shoes.
Andy has driving shoes.
Scott, I didn't want to step in that flume up there at the Overlook in Auburn because I didn't want to get them wet and to somehow erase the magic newness off them. So I neglected to get in there. I just said, no way.
Yeah, Don and I went on a run the other day and he had his brand new ones on and I told him I wanted to go step in the creek to just cool off. It was a warm day and he was a little hesitant. And I thought, what's the deal? I didn't think it was because you had new shoes on. You didn't want to get them wet.
That was the reason. Hey, for a slow start, you did pretty well there, Scott. You know, you set the bar pretty high.
And just a reminder, there will be in the show notes a link to a survey. If you're playing along, that one was called How Much Is Too Much? Author is me. And that one you should probably rank number one.
Well, so far.
I got to say that was a good topic and you did a good job underselling yourself with the starting out slow. So
maybe it was a double with an error. And it was a strong base hit, but there was an error in the field. I got to second base. All right, Ryan, who's next?
Let's go to Don.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. Now, it just occurred to me that we needed to come up with titles for this. So on the fly, I've created a couple titles.
Excuses.
The first title is called Now or Later. You'll never guess what it is. Go ahead and what's the name of the candy? Now and Later? Maybe, yeah. I'll I'm going to go Now and Later. Yeah.
This is an easy one. It's a topic that everybody, you know, is near and dear to everybody's heart, right? We really know there's two kinds of runners in the world. There's morning runners and the rest of the people. Ooh. And that's, you know, that's often something that we struggle with. You wake up in the morning, your alarm's set, you get out, if you're a now person, you get up, you get your stuff on, maybe you have couple sips of coffee and you're out the door. You're a now person. If you're a later person, you're like, ah, I can do it later. So this is an article about deciding whether to run now and later. And I think knowing Don being such an analytical scientific type, this particular article actually does some empirical analysis of when you're running and training is higher quality. Is it quality in the morning now, or is it more high quality in the afternoon or evening later? And I think the article probably leaves that question open, I would guess, because Don, in addition to being scientific and analytical, likes leaving things completely open-ended and inexplicable. And that's what this article does. So it's a brilliant article. And Scott, you can save it because, you know, I guessed it right and we're all good.
You know, Scott, I'm going to interrupt before you go on and take your stab at what you think it might be. And choose either topic title I've given you, now and later, or now or later. H&W did a better job describing my topic and the context of my article than I think I will. And that concerns me a little bit.
Does that mean that he's right?
No, maybe I should have chose what he just described.
Oh, you're saying that his topic is better than your article.
Yeah, that's okay. What I'm saying.
Well, that's not a surprise either.
Yeah.
I was going to go down the same route as Andy. I was thinking about two-a-days.
Mm.
At what point is there an advantage to doing a back-to-back two-a-day run? Go out there now, which is the morning, and then add an evening run. Is there an advantage to doing back-to-back on a single day, or is that putting your body at stress? Is there an advantage to now and later? That's my guess.
Well, I'll tell you, both of those are very, very good. And I think I would be interested in reading those articles. However, it's not the one I've chosen. This came from March 1st, 2018. Scott, will you put it in the show notes, the link? Because I think it's worth the full read. And the fact that I get you to effort that makes me happy.
I will do that if you ever, ever, ever remember to send me the link.
Okay.
He always says, can you link that? And then he never sends me the link. So that's why you never find them in the show notes.
It comes from the Journal of Sports Medicine. The title of the article is Age of Peak Performance in 50K Ultramarathoners. Is it older than in marathoners? That's interesting. So as you get older, are your performances better or stronger for ultramarathoners than marathoners that are younger? So here's how the article goes. Here's the results. Let's just get right into that.
Yeah. You know, let's get to the results, because I still don't understand what your article's about.
Well, sometimes a title is just a hook.
Okay.
Okay, here it goes. 494,000 runners were analyzed, and that's a lot of runners. Here's the results. When the top 10 finishers, and they're all segregated by one-year age groups, were analyzed, the age of the peak running speed was 41 years in both women and men. So in the ultra marathon group, the people that were performing the best in the top 10 were all older, 41 years old. When the fastest finishers in the one-year age group intervals were analyzed, the age of peak running speed was 40 years old in women and 39 years old in men. That's pretty interesting, but there's more. In summary, the age of peak running speed in the 50K is older than what has been reported for marathoners. And what I want to discuss is why. So the article cited that through looking at 494,000 runners, but why would that be? And so I thought about it. And I throw this up now for discussion, because that's really where things get interesting. I imagine that in 10Ks and 100Ks, there's even a greater distance or variability from the young and the old group. In the younger group, they have a couple things to their advantage. They have strength and they have aggressiveness and competitiveness. That's going to be on the younger side. But on the older side, we have experience and we may be a bit slower, but we've learned years of lessons and we can apply those. Now, in marathons, they're very, very similar. And this is on the side of the younger group. They are flat for the most part. They start at about the same temperature, maybe 56, and end at 65 degrees. They try to find very tight conditions that people can perform at the very best, because that's what will make people sign up. Everything looks the same, but totally different in the ultramarathon group, We've got different weather conditions. We've got different trail conditions. They become very treacherous as you go up and down. The profiles are all different. And so I think that's why you perform better at the ultra marathon. You get people with experience that know how to read their body, how to handle different conditions. And I think that's why the advantage goes to the older people in long distance, and to the younger people have the advantage in the short distance. So that's my opinion. What do you guys think?
I will tell you that you overanalyzed, Don. I think that the answer is much more simple than that.
What is it?
The answer is the population that are running those distances. If you look at the average age of someone running an ultra marathon, it's much older. And so, of course, the ones that are finishing at the top are older than a 5K or a marathon. I think you were comparing ultra to a marathon. There's more younger people running marathons. And so the people that are finishing faster are younger.
Well, no, I don't. I think Scott's wrong. I think that the key, and Don started to go down this direction. I think the key difference, especially when we've talked, you just talked earlier about the mental side of running ultras. I think the mental piece of successful pacing is a mental game in any distance, but it becomes a more complex game the longer the distance is. And it requires patience most of all. And I think if there's one quality, everybody is born with some degree of patience. But it's also something we establish over time, and we establish with experience. And we've all seen the young, enthusiastic runner burst off the starting line only to get reeled in by the old grizzled veteran, you know, with 5 miles to go in the race. So I would actually be curious, Don, taking that point of extrapolating it to other distances beyond 50K. 50 mile, 100K, 100 mile, and I suspect the chart would continue to rise with the more successful older runners the longer the race is.
I would think that would be the case. I know that a lot can happen in 4 hours, but even more can happen in 8 hours that you have to handle. And the longer the distance is, the more experience you need of time on your feet to solve problems, recognize problems coming early, and make that change. You can get away with a lot in 26 miles that you can't get away with in longer distances.
I think older runners are typically more patient with themselves too, right?
I think older runners have had a lot of things go wrong, and they say, you know what? I remember this when it happened in the past, and I don't want to go down that road. I'm going to change what I'm doing. I'm not going to start off fast. I'm not going to let myself get dehydrated on and on. I'm going to take this rock out of my shoe now, because when I don't, it was a very painful finish. So making good decisions comes with experience. And I think that's why the ultra marathoners had better times than the youth.
But I got one more question before we move on. Why is it called now or later though? Is like the now, are the now people the young people and the later people the old people?
Well, because I had to come up with a article title while Scott was giving his description of his article, now and later seemed like it fit pretty nice. And I just had one of those now and laters yesterday, and it was very tasty. And I called back to that experience, and I said, you know what? That made me feel good when I had that now and later. I think I'll have that same feeling again by making it my title of my article.
Scott, I think if you put something in the show notes, and that let's modify that poll, modify the poll and say, you know, there should be a category for good article, crappy title.
Well, I think we all need to review our text messages, because I think I reminded both of you yesterday, or maybe even today, that this is Audio Magazine and you needed to come up with titles. So go back and read your texts.
Scott, for the record, I don't read all the texts. I read the last text. Okay. So when there's a few things written before, maybe I miss it.
Well, it is usually true that Scott and I go on for like 30 or 40 texts, and then Don comes in and is like, what are you guys talking about?
All right.
If you want to take your performance to the next level, think about taking your nutrition to the next level, and Energy can help you there.
Here's what Bob Sieberhaar, a recent Trail Runner Nation guest, had to say. And as you know, Scott, he's an Olympic U.S. sports dietitian and a board-certified specialist in sports dietetics. UCAN is the future of sports nutrition because of its patented superstarch energy. Its slow-burning carb digests easily and delivers steady, long-lasting energy. And Scott, we talk about the gut all the time, how it is one of the secrets to a successful long run, and UCAN helps you.
That's why our friends at UCAN Energy have made the Trail Runner Nation Starter Pack. It includes a box of bars and a box of Edge Energy. You can get that by going to ucan.co/trnstarter, and you can get 20% off with the code TRNstarter. Just go to Trail Runner Nation, click on the Deals tab, and scroll down to the UCAN section, and it has all that information for you. Who are we to now?
AJW.
Andy, right?
Yeah, this better be good. And, you know, you had some pretty strong trash talk, and I'm looking forward to the article.
Well, you know, one of the, I would say that in ultramarathon trail running in the last 10 years, I think we've seen a real increase in the type of people who come to the sport, and that running has become a spiritual endeavor for many people. And there's almost a religious aspect to it. That's not what my article is about, but my article is titled, Don't Fear the Holy Trinity. Don't Fear the Holy Trinity.
You want to go first, Freeman?
Oh, no. I think I need to help build my story off of what you say. I'm a little bit short here.
Okay. So I'm focusing on one word in the title, and that is holy. Except I am going to change the spelling of holy to H-O-L-E-Y. And we're talking about holes in socks, that we're not supposed to fear having holes in our socks. That shouldn't ruin your race. You should still continue, even if you do have up to three holes, the trinity of holes in your socks. It's okay, because if you get to the next aid station, they always have some tape there. You should have tape in your hydration bag anyway. So you shouldn't have that worry. You should move beyond it. Don't let it be a big problem. Mm. Build on that, Freeman.
Well, you know, my history with AJW is that he'll hide one word that holds a lot of meaning and then put frivolous words around it to try to distract from the word that is going to carry the article. And I think the word that he was looking for and trying to hide was Trinity. You know, the Trinity. And I thought, we've talked about that before, and I can't remember exactly what it represented. It was something like your gut, your legs, and your mind. These are the three things that have to be right during a run for you to be successful. And you're managing those three, the Holy Trinity, throughout the run. And I think that's where he was going.
That's good.
Man, that is, Don, that is really close. Scott, yours wasn't close at all. but Don, you're on to it. A brief story. When I finished my first 100-miler in 2000, my running mentor from Southern California had finished a couple hours before me, Tom Nielsen. And we were talking through the postmortem of the race, and I said, oh my God, at mile 30, I was puking. At mile 50, I had terrible blisters. And by mile 75, my quads were trashed. And he said, well, AJ, you just experienced the holy trinity of ultra running. Mm-hmm. So Don, you said legs and stomach. Legs, stomach, and feet. Mm. We know going into long distance races that we're probably going to have some foot problems. We're probably going to at some point have some trouble with our stomachs, and we're going to have to deal with trashed quads. And you can't fear it. If you live too much in fear of the holy trinity of ultra running, you can't embrace the experience. You can't mitigate against it. You can't plan for what you're going to do when you get a blister. Don't fear it. Know that you will probably get a blister and be prepared for getting that blister. So the article is about the Holy Trinity, first of all, blisters, quads, and stomach, how to deal with those issues, and then how to address them on the fly in the race and not fear them.
AJW, how long is the article? That's quite a topic for a single magazine. Sounds long.
Well, remember, this is the year-end double issue.
Okay.
This is a special, you know that how and sometimes in the middle of the magazine, there's like that special advertising section for the timeshare company. This is one of those. It probably even has a centerfold picture of
right.
someone, trashed feet or something like that. So it'll fit in the magazine. I suspect it's only, 60,000 words or so.
Hey, Andy, as a headmaster, would I get like a 30% credit? Because I was talking about blisters with my answer.
Yeah, I mean, I actually feel pretty bad that I came up with this one and you guessed a third of it and Don guessed 2/3 of it. I don't know. It's a good topic, but it is. I mean, it's so good that you guys were able to guess it.
And AGW, I want to dig a bit deeper, if we can, about don't fear the Holy Trinity. The word fear, that's where I want to try to dissect a bit here. Are you saying expect these things to happen, embrace them when they do, and that's what we should do as ultra runners? Or are you saying don't fear because you can avoid these things if you're intelligent? How are you using the word fear?
Well, it's more in the context of living in fear, like literally as the race is going on. Don't be like, oh my God, my stomach's going to get trashed. Or, oh my God, I just walked through that creek and now I'm going to get blisters. Or, oh my God, I just went down that hill too fast and I'm probably going to trash my quads. I would say instead, embrace those things, accept those things. You know, I talk to a lot of athletes, especially as they're dealing with pre-race anxiety, that there's nervousness and fear. There's being stressed out and there's being scared. And when you feel stress and nervousness, you're in more of a fight mode. When you're scared and you're in fear, you know, you feel a flight mode. And so I don't want people I want them to be in the fight mode when it comes to stomach and quads and blisters and not in the flight mode. Oh, I got blisters. My feet are trashed. I'm going to drop out. I think the largest number of dropouts in long distance running are from these three things. And probably in order, they are stomach, blisters, and quads. And I think if they're managed right, you don't have to fear them. You can accept them and you can get through them and you can essentially finish the race. You might not finish it feeling as good as you thought you would or with as fast a time as you thought you'd get, but you can do it. The problem is, of course, in normal life, if you're vomiting profusely or you can't walk without a limp because your legs are so sore or you feel like you can't put shoes on because the bottom of your feet are all blistered, you're in normal life, you're probably going to call in sick from work or whatever. And instead, you have to run 40 more miles.
So I want to talk about this fear and you're dealing with it, experiencing it. Number one, I imagine there's an energy cost to that when you're out there because now you're running with that fear and there's going to be some emotional energy spent on it that you could be using to complete your race. But I want to speak specifically to the ability to make sound decisions while in the fear state. As you're running, can you become a good captain or navigator with fear on your side? Now, not as an ally, but carrying it along.
I think I think yes, but I'll add a side note because on the podcast in the past we've talked about, for example, pacers and crews and how important they are. I think in this particular issue, they can be very valuable. You could turn to your pacer and say, "Oh my God, I'm really scared. I'm getting a blister," or you get into your crew at mile 60 and you're like, "Oh my gosh, I've got terrible nausea. I'm afraid I'm about to boot." Right. And that's what your crew and pacer can be there to help you mitigate against it. In the absence of a pacer or a crew, it gets a little bit to the now and later article. I think experience and wisdom that comes with age will help you not fear it. The first time, and it happens, everybody has a first time, right? Even the legendary Ian Sharman, he ran 10 Western states without ever having stomach issues. But a couple of years ago at Leadville, all of a sudden, out of the blue, he had stomach issues. And he hadn't experienced it before. Even though he'd run and won many ultras, he hadn't experienced it before. And it affected him mentally. it didn't affect him for long. He was able to recover and finish the race well and all of that, but it did affect him mentally nonetheless. And so I think it's a lot of it's about expectation. Again, that's why the article is there. It's saying right out of the gate, don't fear this. It's going to happen. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be scary. Nobody likes to throw up, but don't fear it. You'll get through it. You just have to do it. Generations of, I remember a pacer of mine at Angeles Crest. It was about mile 82. I was running down the steep hill, going down to Idlehour. And I was like, oh my God, my quads are trashed. And he turned to me and said, Andy, shut up. Everybody's quads are trash. You know? And it added, you know, I was like, well, of course, it's mile 83 and I'm running down a steep hill.
Now, you know, Scott peeled back the curtain at the beginning of the show, and I'm going to peel back one more layer, and that is that AJW quite often is scrambling for his gear when it's time, whether it's a microphone, a headphone, the power button. He's always searching for something. And in this case, he's in Bend, Oregon, and his good friend Ian Sharman is there and loaned him the microphone. And I want to know this, AJW. Did you make a deal with Ian that you would mention him positively and make a story up on the podcast since it was his mic?
I did not, but when I go to drop it off, I'll have to give him a heads up. indeed, yes, I didn't have my mic. We'd already postponed this podcast once, and I dreaded having to tell you that my mic was still in storage. And I said, who do I know in Bend with a mic? And I was like, Ian Sharman, he has everything. And sure enough, he did.
All right, Rye. We have one more topic each, and this is the speed round. Ryan, who goes first?
Should we go back around? Let's start with Scott.
All right. This is where I hit the ball out of the park. Maybe not with the topic, but absolutely with the title. You're going to have to really think on this one, folks. Jovny delivers another finish.
Jovny.
Delivers another finish.
Boy, AJW, I hope you've got something.
Let's like pretend it's like the National Spelling Bee where you're able to ask for a little.
Yeah.
How do you spell Jovny?
Jovny is spelled J, capital J, O, V as in Victor, N, Y, Jovny.
Maybe it's an acronym. I'm not sure what he's got going here.
And the rest of it is Jovny delivers another finish?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I got it.
Go ahead.
I got it.
Yeah, I think we're going to nail this one. Go ahead. You go first, yeah. Don. You go first.
Well, I mean, he's obviously talking about the recent finish by Killian, and he just keeps doing it year in, year out. And I think that's where he's going. And Jovny or whatever the acronym he's created to throw us off, because if he used Killian or Jornet, we'd guess it, obviously. So that's where I'm going.
Well, I think, you know how you were talking about the hiding a word, you know, the kind of going with the deflection. I think Jovny is the deflection word. And I think the key here is delivering. And so I think that this is an article about some guy we've never heard of, but he's a mailman. He delivers the mail. and so it's the word deliver. Is the key. Maybe a mailman, maybe FedEx, maybe UPS, something like that. But, you know, one of these guys who's, you know, the mild-mannered postal carrier by day and on the weekends just crushes the ultras. And this is an article to expose this guy to the world. And it's Jovny delivers another finish. Maybe he runs in his brown UPS suit.
That's brilliant.
Well, both of you are way off, and I knew that neither would get this because it is so cryptic in its title. But every word has a meaning in this title. Jovny is the name of a stork, and as we know, storks deliver babies. Now, Jovny is a specific stork. Back in 1974, there was a company that came up with this spokesperson for their product. That product, Vlasic Pickles. And if you remember back, if you were born before the 70s during these commercials, Jovny was the stork that walked around with a dill pickle as a cigar And the person who did the voice mimicked Groucho Marx. That is what we're talking about. Jovny is the stork that delivers, and yet another finish. This article is about dill pickle juice. Mm. Dill pickle juice is something that I recently discovered. I've heard about it for years. I've probably even seen some dill pickle juice on some aid station tables. But recently I bought a small package off of Amazon with these dill pickle shots. It's a small little 5-hour energy size bottle of dill pickle juice. And I have fallen in love with it. I just think that that salty brine on hot days, right now we're experiencing high triple digits in California. And this dill pickle juice has just been amazing for those hot runs. As we know, dill pickle juice has the magnesium and the sodium. I think there's some potassium in there as well. Electrolytes, if you will, that can help you get to the finish line. Hmm. Have either of you tried dill pickle juice in your runs?
I have not tried dill pickle juice on my runs. I have worked many years on the sideline at a high school football team. And one of the trainers would bring pickle juice for the players that are cramping. And many of the players didn't complain about their cramps, so they didn't have to take a shot of pickle juice. But it was effective.
Yeah, I haven't myself, but I've seen it in action, you know, at Michigan Bluff, for example, at Western States. And my son, who's a rather competitive bicycle racer, he swears by it. He'll even have a small, similar, like you said, a 5-hour energy size bottle, and you know, he'll put it in his cycling pocket and just take it like a shot almost. And I think I don't know this for sure, you might know, but I think there's also a way you're tongue reacts to the pickle juice, kind of similar to mustard packets, where so it's not only the stuff that's in the pickle juice that helps relieve the cramps, but like the way your body reacts to the initial taking of the pickle juice helps relieve the cramps as well, which is part of why you don't need to chug like a 16-ounce thing of it. You know, you can have a little vial of it and it's enough.
We've talked about that in the past, AJW, about it being a neurologic reflex that occurs on the back of the tongue, that when you go into the blood and try to measure what just happened from drinking the pickle juice, you can't see any measurable difference. And so how could that affect a muscle? So they're thinking neurological, and that is somehow tripped by pickle juice.
That must be one of those podcasts where you like have actual smart people on.
I think it was you, AJW.
I don't think so.
All right, let's move on. Who are we going to, Ryan?
Going to Don.
Okay, here we go. The title of the article, and it's fresh. The ink is still wet on this title of this article. It is, what'll it be? What'll it be? And don't think too much into it. Every word does not mean something in this article, like Scott did, who spent weeks trying to craft his title. Mine came up just spontaneously, right from the gut. What'll it be? What will it be?
It's about aid station volunteers. You know, we love aid stations. We've talked about them on the podcast a lot. They're the lifeblood of ultra marathons. Runners come into aid stations sometimes in a state of confusion, a state of not knowing what they're going to do next and how they're going to do. And typically, a nice aid station volunteer will come along and just help them and say, "What'll it be?" Mm. And you look at the aid, so you'll say, "Well, maybe I'll have a couple of potato chips and some M&Ms and a sip of ginger ale." So it's a nice saying, you know, what'll it be? Kind of like what a bartender says, and what'll it be?
Yeah.
You know, today. But this is taking that idea to those wonderful angels of our existence in ultras who work the aid stations. So I think the article's a tribute to those people.
I love it, but that's not it. Scott?
I was going to say that's probably better than my guess. But here is my guess, because I know Don. He and I run frequently together, and we've been devising or coming up with our next challenge, and we'll unveil that maybe a little bit later. But I think that a part of that challenge is we need to get in shape for this challenge, and I think what'll it be is the question that he has put in his brain every time he opens the refrigerator. He says, what'll it be? Is it going to be the ice cream bar with covered chocolate and nuts, or is it going to be a couple grapes, or is it going to be a healthier choice like an apple? What'll it be? And he's going to force himself to ask that question every time he picks up a piece of food. If I pick up a muffin from Costco, a Costco-sized muffin that's the size of your head, he's going to say, what'll it be? This yumminess that's going to last for about 30 seconds that it's going to take me to eat this thing, or what'll it be? Is it going to be better performance out on the trail? That's what I think it's about.
You know, that is very, very good, Scott, but it's not it. So this is on page, if you thumb through the audio magazine, you'll find on page 71, there'll be this, the title of the article. But to get to it and to read it, you must participate in the survey. And in this survey, after you've answered your question, right or wrong, after you answer the question, you get to enter into the article itself. And the survey question is, what is your favorite post-run meal? And I'm going to throw that to both of you if you want to discover the rest of the article. You need to participate as those do that are on page 71. What's your favorite post-run meal?
A big cheeseburger and fries. That's always been, you know, at Western States, it would be over at the In-N-Out Burger there in Auburn. But anything will do. A big, juicy, drippy cheeseburger and salty fries. Absolutely. That's my post-race meal. Probably had it just about every 100-miler I've ever done.
Booyah! Scott?
You know, mine's actually a little simpler than that. I would love the idea of a double-double In-N-Out Burger after my race. But what I end up doing is, because my mouth is just, you know how at the end of a race, you're just, your mouth is sore. It's got a bad taste. I always reach for a can of Campbell's tomato soup. That's what I have. Tomato soup.
Well, I found this article when I was looking just online.
You have to answer the article, answer the question yourself, Freeman.
You want me to answer?
Yeah.
I'm right there in line behind AJW, behind him because he finished first. I'm going for a big old juicy cheeseburger, and it appears that AJW and I are not alone. That the article that I have is entitled, Why Do Outdoor Adventures Make You Crave a Giant Juicy Burger? And you can find it on our show notes because Scott's linking it. It's from outsideonline.com, and it is a podcast to listen to. And I did listen to it, and it was fantastic. It had six of their writers up for discussion and two dietitians. So eight people in total speaking about favorite post adventure meals. And almost all of them were juicy burgers or pizza or something to that effect, things that we crave. And part of the rationale, as the dietitians came on, they said, you know, we show up to the trailhead undernourished. We haven't had this big meal and we just want to be ready to run and we haven't filled ourselves up with things. And as the day goes on, we start dreaming up things with great carbs and protein and fats and salts. So that's what we crave because we're starving out there. And so that's one of the reasons that these pizzas and burgers become a desirable piece. And then they talked a little bit more about it, just besides the nutrients that we're craving, that it becomes a celebration. As AJW said, at the end of his 100-miler, almost all of them, there's a celebration to be had because it's either been a great effort or a great performance. And so that is a celebratory for him. And then there are traditions. You know, this is what we do at the end. It's our tradition. At the end of this race, I always, always go for a burger and I want to relive that again. So it tastes great, much like a meal that we may have on a holiday. And we say, you know what? That holiday equals this and I'm going for it. Scott?
Have you ever craved something sweet after a long run or a race?
No, I think I've had a mouthful of sweet during the run, so I haven't had a desire for sweetness. AJW?
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I do think the thing about the mouth feel though that you talked about, Scott. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not so much sweet, but sometimes just something like seltzer water. like just bland seltzer. It's not sweet, but then you, it's cold and the bubbles kind of flow around in there. Like that's the kind of thing that, again, it's not sweet, but that I would rinse down the big cheeseburger and fries with like a crispy seltzer water. You know what I mean? But no, you've had 20 plus hours of sweet stuff. So typically you don't. Now, a few hours later or a day later, you know, you might be back at work and someone brought donuts into the break room. You're probably going to eat those donuts.
Your weight. Mm-hmm. Eat your weight in donuts. Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought the article was interesting that you know, the giant burger isn't just one person that wants it, but collectively as a community that we reach for those burgers and they are desirable and are good and makes me feel less guilty and live to that tradition. I think it's a good one.
I think some race directors need to maybe approach some of these burger joints as sponsors. That may be something smart to do. Round us out, AJW. What's your final topic or article title?
Yeah, my title before, as you guys noted, is a very, very long article. This one's a little bit briefer, it's very thoughtful, of course, well-researched and compelling. It's called The Forgotten 50s. The Forgotten 50s.
Hmm. I've got a few ideas, Scott. You know, I kind of go two ways with it. You know, part of me says, wait a minute, he's talking about some of the 50-mile runs that used to be on everyone's calendar and everybody used it to prepare for either the long race or make that just an A race. And what happened to those races? Because now everybody's leaning towards 100K as the new 50, perhaps. So I think he might be going there. And that, I think I'm going to leave it at that.
You know, that's the first place I was going to go was exactly that. Race director Julie Fingar and I had a long discussion about this, how people are skipping the 50Ks and the 50 milers. And the main goal of any of the 50Ks or any of the 50 milers is to get to that 100K or especially that 100 mile mark. And so she's seeing in her race organization, there's fewer people signing up for the 50Ks and the 50 milers. They all want to jump into the 100 milers. So I think that was a very good guess, Freeman. I'm going to go with a little bit different tact. You know, when we get to the track and we're doing speed work, usually we default to 400s, right? So you go out there and you do, you know, five or six. I've never done a 400 since I was in high school, so I don't know. But AJW would know because he's a coach. You go out there and you do like four or five of them and you try to keep them at the same pace. And that's your speed training. This is an article that goes back to maybe the olden days. We've talked about the olden days a number of times where you don't need to run that far for these speed workouts. It's the 50 meter or the 50 yard sprints that we're forgetting about, that there is power in just a 50 yard sprint, that there is a metabolical and physiological advantage to do a short 50 mile sprint or sorry, a 50 yard or 50 meter sprint.
That's good, Scott. I want to throw a third one out there just because, you know, I'm concerned about the content of the article getting lost. And so it's a good title. And so I'm going to throw this out there, AJ. I think we're talking about the fifth decade. You know, we talked about it on my article submitted earlier that the 40s are the performance years. People are just tearing it up and stepping on podiums and owning them in their 40s. And then people celebrate the longevity of the sixth decade. What happened to the fifth decade? I think we've forgotten about the 50s, and we need to recognize it.
I like that Don changes the rules 50 minutes into the podcast where he gets multiple choices. Go ahead, Andy.
So now Don is guessing that the article is two different things. So maybe it's two articles.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don is playing free and loose with the rules. So I will say, Don, your first article interpretation was close. And you, Scott, you're absolutely right. You know, we've seen, I think it started when Western States began, you know, their 100K qualifiers, and then everybody, a lot of 50-mile races be turned into 100K. They just figured out a way to tack on 12 more miles. And I do think there are 50-mile, I mean, the 50-mile distance is such a wonderful distance. You can do it in a day, you know, but it is a forgotten distance, and it is something that, in fact, I'm writing this week's a Taproom article about four fantastic fall 50s, because there are some great 50-milers all across the country that take place in the fall that probably still have, you can still sign up for, because, you know, not as many people run 50 milers, but this, and so you're close, but this is as I often write in the audio magazine, this kind of comes in the back. If yours is on page 71, mine's on page 94, and it's a historical expose of three classic 50 mile races that are no more. The first one. And if you've ever spent time with folks like Scotty Mills or Charles Savage or some of the old timers from California, I know the late Greg Soderlund talked fondly about this race. It was simply called the Nugget 50, and it ran for a couple of years, 5-7 years in the gold country of California. It was just a wonder. You can't even Google it. If you Google the Nugget 50, all you get is, you know, some random race result from 1984, you know, of a photocopied thing in Ultra Running Magazine. So that's the first forgotten 50 in this article. The second forgotten 50 is one of the oldest races in Arizona, is the Crown King 50K, which starts at Lake Pleasant at about 1,200 feet above sea level and finishes at about 6,500 feet in the small mining town of Crown King. It's an uphill race, and it's a classic. It's in the springtime. The weather's usually beautiful. Lots of people use it as a tune-up for later in the season races. And for 3 years, the Arizona Road Racers had a 50-mile race, and it started 20 miles down the sort of road and trail from where the 50K started. It went by this old resort called the Castle Hot Springs Resort, and then it joined the 50K course and finished. It was a beautiful run. Started at 3 a.m., which is really unusual, but a beautiful run, the Crown King 50 miler, which is no more. Although, side note on that, now that I've moved to Arizona, I'm agitating for the current organizers of the Crown King 50K, which is Aravaipa Running, to bring back the 50 miler, at which point they will say, "Oh, sure, AJW, do you want to be the race director?" So we'll see if that's unlikely to happen. And then the third one is more recent, that most listeners have probably heard of, but it was probably for about 10 years the most competitive, single most competitive ultra in the country, maybe the world, and that was the North Face San Francisco 50 miler, held in the Marin Headlands, late November, December. It was actually the first race that I Run Far did Twitter coverage for. It had some showdowns between Matt Carpenter and Uli Steidel. They were one of the first ultras that had prize money, $10,000 for the winner of the North Face San Francisco. And a lot of the new people coming to the sport probably don't know about the Nugget 50, the Crown King 50, and the North Face San Francisco 50. So this article is a little bit of a historical expose to share people. Yes, 50s are kind of going by the wayside, but there are some classic 50s that should not be forgotten. They're a big part of the history of the sport.
Hey, Andy, let's unpack that a little bit. I mean, I haven't heard of two of those three. I have heard of the North Face. I hadn't heard of the other two. Why do you suppose the 50K distance and the 50-mile distance are just stepping stones? They're just stepping stones to get to the further distance. Why is that? Because years ago, you know, that could have been the culmination or the goal or the destination was a completion of a 50K.
Well, I mean, I think fortunately or unfortunately, most of the attention of the ultra world goes on the 100 milers. You know, we've just kind of concluded the season with the big three of that everyone wants to do: Western States and Hard Rock in the United States, and UTMB over in Europe. And I think they get a lot of attention, and it's well deserved attention. But I've also talked to a lot of people, some of my closest friends who are now older like myself, and we're never able to nail the 100-mile distance. We're incredibly successful at 50 milers and 100Ks. and could have just kept doing those. But there was almost this community peer pressure to do 100. I mean, the saying that running a 50 miler is a gateway drug to running a 100 miler is really kind of true. I think what's sad is if sometimes people get to that point where they get to that 100 miler, they don't have a good day. Maybe they get blisters or their quads are trashed or they puke. They quit the sport altogether. Rather than just saying, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm better off doing shorter distances. I can do a 50 miler and be back in my bed, my own bed that night. I don't have to stay up all night. I don't have to spend all this money and be away from my family for a long time and things like that. So it's a shame that the sport doesn't celebrate all the distances. And I think there are, I mean, I was actually in a conversation about this with somebody who was asking me, because I've been a voter for the Ultra Magazine Ultra Runner of the Year awards for about 15 years. And there's a perception that, you know, 100 milers are like if you do well at 100 milers, you're automatically going to do well in Ultra Runner of the Year. And it's kind of true. But it hasn't always been true, right? There were people who would do really well at a 48-hour timed race or set a world record at 50 milers or at Comrades or something and get Ultra Runner of the Year. But it's that cachet event and it just attention gets drawn to it. And since we're in this world where, you know, where the attention economy, as some people call it, that thing that gets the most attention, right? It's that happens to be 100 milers. Mm-hmm.
It makes me think a little bit about the pain that happens in a shorter race, like a 5K. You know, it's an amputation, and the 50K is like a death by a million cuts. You know, it just lasts longer. And I've got to say that, you know, if a 50 miler could be much, much more difficult than a 100 miler when you run it at the very peak of your performance and at the very peak of your effort. That 50 could just be a suffer fest. And in a 100 mile, you can dial it back because you can't survive at your peak for that long. So I think in some cases, your 200, your 100 can be much easier than your 50s.
Yeah, Mark Godal, one of the most decorated ultra runners on any surface, any time, recently passed away at the age of 50. But he and I talked about that a lot. He finished Western States 8 times. But he's like, I've never been more sore than after a hard road 50 miler. You know, and this was a guy who would run a 50 miler, you know, in 6 hours, you know, and just hammer it from the go, run every step, you know. And it's really true. I think one of the interesting ironies, though, Scott, about the gateway thing, like everyone's just skipping to the 100 miler. I think in road racing, it was sort of the opposite. Remember, 20 years ago, you could go to any neighborhood 10K or 10 miler. That distance almost doesn't exist. There's either 5Ks, which are, you know, recreational and everyone does it, or half marathons or marathons. That's what everyone wants to do. You can't really do unless there's a, it's kind of a classic 10 miler, like Yankee Homecoming 10 miler or Broad Street 10 miler. There really aren't, or the Cal 10, you know, in Stockton, there aren't really 10 milers anymore. And it's a great distance. You can hammer it. You can recover quickly. And so I think, like I said, 50 miles is a great distance. You sleep in your own bed. You know, maybe it takes you 12, 14, 16 hours, but you know, you're not running very much at night. You're not losing sleep. You can get through it with minimum of gear and nutrition and so forth. And so, I mean, I was highlighting the three historical 50s that have, you know, that have died out. But I mean, I worry that there may be more 50s that are, I mean, where you see most of the 50s now are as companion events to hundreds, right? Where you can run the 100 or you can run the 50. And that's kind of sad. Now, the few that are staying alive, like I'm going to write about this week, Man Against Horse, Mountain Masochist, Lookout Mountain in Tennessee is a great one. Dick Collins Fire Trails up in the Bay Area. Those are classic 50s that are still pure 50s. Dick Collins has changed their course a bit, but it's still a pure 50 miler. And they're in the Redwoods there in the East Bay. So, I mean, I hope that those races, you can probably sign up, by the way, if you're listening and you want to sign up for a 50, you could probably sign up for any of those four that I just mentioned right now. No lottery, no anything. So, you know, I think there's something worth talking about there.
And as people are listening to this 50 discussion, what's your thought on the JFK 50? That's a race that's been around a long time and still has good legs to it, I would think. Do you have any fear of that race moving on?
Well, fortunately, the two granddaddies of the 50s seem to be alive and well. You guys might know more about the American River 50, but it still has 600-700 that are in it every year. Does that seem right? And of course, so that's a healthy race. And that's so California has their classic spring, 50 miler at the American River 50. I know the course has changed a little bit over the years, but it's still a classic. Lots of runnable, a little bit of trail. It's a test of a runner's versatility. Same thing with JFK. You've got some road, you've got the Appalachian Trail, you've got a towpath along a river, and then you got some rolling country roads. I think those two races are sort of cement the racing calendar, late fall, spring tune up. I hope they stay. They're the ones a lot of road runners have heard about. They tend to be, especially JFK is kind of the first ultra that people who might come from marathons in the middle Atlantic especially will do, because they don't have to do a lot of technical running. So I think JFK and American River, whatever the community can do to keep those races thriving, I think is really important for the sport. They don't get as much attention, as the hundreds, but they're still great, solid races, extremely well organized, classic courses in beautiful places. I sure hope they stick around.
One of the things that I've seen, and then we'll finish up here. One of the trends that I've seen is a lot of the 100 milers are offering shorter distances in conjunction with their 100 miler. Of course, UTMB has their whole week worth of races, but even here in the U.S., where they'll have a 100 mile race and they'll think, hey, the aid stations are out there already. Let's add a 50K version or even a 25K version. And I think they're getting some people signed up for that. So I think you're right, Andy. We need to not only reflect on these races that used to be, but also let's embrace every distance and let's celebrate finishers at every distance. And I think that's great. Hey, good audio magazine. For those of you who want a printed copy, just go down to your local newsstand. Do they still have newsstands? Probably in New York or something like that. But you can pick an audio magazine up there. Just go in to the newsstand person. There's got to be a name for that person too. And just ask them, say, I'm here to get the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine. And they should have them plenty of stock there.
We have past issues available online. So if you can't get it from the newsstand, you can go back and seek the library and pick one out, download it, full color. And I think that would be a good thing to do.
In closing, I want to just add a little personal story, because we haven't had a podcast since Western States, and I think the listeners have gotten to know us a little bit. I was leaving Western States and my flight was canceled, and I was like, all flights are canceled these days, and I was just sort of driving around aimlessly in the American River Basin. And I ended up staying at Scott's house. He just said, hey, come on over. he learned that I was wandering around aimlessly. And it, as I think many of the listeners know, we've been friends, the three of us, for over a decade. And the time we spend in person is few and far between, occasionally at Western States, maybe at other races. But it also speaks to the connection that we've forged here at Trail Runner Nation, and get this, Scott and his wife were leaving early the next morning to go see their grandchild, their brand new born grandchild. And they just said, oh, AJW, stay at the house long as you want. Just close the door and, everything will be good. So, I mean, that's the power of Trail Runner Nation. And I want to thank you, Scott, and your wife. And you guys can come stay at my house anytime in Phoenix if you want.
Well, to give you a little background, Andy was going to sleep in his sleeping bag in a campground along the American River Trail. And it was hot that day. It was probably in the high 90s. And I said, Andy, no, you're not going to spend the night in a sleeping bag because your flight got canceled. Come over to my place. We have an extra bed. So it was a pleasure to have you over here and save you some I actually was doing it for the people you were going to be riding on the plane with the next day.
and it was kind of cool to see Command Central there, the office you're sitting in right now. Like, you know, it was kind of cool to see where the sausage is made.
Our pleasure. Hey, thank you very much, everybody, for joining the nation. We hope you had fun with this one. Every once in a while, we get a little giddy, a little nutty, and we have a fun episode. We hope you enjoy it as well. We hope that you actually learned something. And more importantly, we hope you go out and run
Moss.
But before you go out and run Moss, make sure you go to the show notes and click on that survey, because we have some money riding on who had the best topic. There's still some trash talk going on, and we need the nation to settle this bet. So click on that link. You'll be able to see the results yourself after enough people fill out the survey.
And I'm going to appeal to the listening audience for some mercy votes on my first topic. I really need some help on that one, Scott.
No, you can't appeal. There's no mercy votes. This is flat out deserve or did not deserve.
And now we've reached the end of the podcast, really the finish line, Scott, where we give high fives as we're coming through the big arch. And we're going to thank our executive producer and editor, Ryan Warr.
And our social media guru, Yana Gibalova.
And our website graphic engineer, Katie Burke.
We also want to thank the Patreon supporters. If you want to become one, you can go to our website, hit the Support Us tab, and you can sign up on our Patreon channel. We also want to thank our business Patreon member, Doug Crumley. Doug Crumley is a coach for your finances. He is a private wealth advisor with Crumley & Associates, which is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Visit him at www.dougcrumleyjr.com.
Scott, we mentioned the deals page quite often. That's on our website, trailrunnernation.com. And we've made a lot of changes there, and we're really proud of it.
There's a lot of information there. Of course, there's the deals page where you can get all sorts of discounts on gear that we love and trust. We also have all of our other podcasts. We also have the Training Principles link. So we just started the Training Principles episodes at the beginning of this year. All those are kind of organized in one area. So if you're just getting into trail running and want to know the basics of where to start, go to the Training Principles tab. You can also sign up for our newsletter. We don't fill your mailbox full of junk every week or twice a week. Only when there's important things to happen, you'll also be notified when a new podcast hits the air.
So go to trailrunnernation.com.